of the Ways and Means Committee, and today we are here to hear a report by the Department of Education on Oregon student demographic and assessment data disaggregated by race and ethnicity. Kate, or whomever?
Yeah, so.
Welcome to the committee.
Thank you very much. Good afternoon, and this sunny afternoon,
yes.
Where we'd all probably prefer to be out for a nice afternoon walk. So we'll try to make this at least well worth your time. And if we finish early, there we go.
All right.
For the record, I'm Kate Dixon, Deputy Superintendent for the Department of Education. And I've brought with me my colleague, Dr. Wayne Neuberger, Associate Superintendent for Assessment. And we'd like to provide an overview for you this afternoon regarding the data that we have in relationship to all Oregon students and the information that we have in relationship to disaggregating that data by ethnicity. This has been a question that has surfaced a number of times during this session and in prior sessions as well. And with our capability of around data and using our data, we have the ability at this point to be able to disaggregate it at the state level, at the local school district level, and ultimately at the school level, which is very helpful. I'll begin with this overall overview with a comment that was made by Secretary Page when he was here a couple months ago, and in his comment about understanding how students are doing, he said one of the most important ways that we can serve our children is that we can assure that that their performance data is not invisible. And I think that's really what we bring to you today. We have areas in our assessment data that we see a lot of progress by our students around all ethnicities. We also have some areas in our data that show a significant achievement gap. And what we'll do today is probably give you a broad brush overview, and then you can take this home, read it, think about it, and then we'll also be available for questions at a later time as more questions occur, because they will. And one thing about data is it not only provides you information, but it also triggers another whole set of questions. Well, if we know this, then what about that? So we're prepared to try to answer some of those questions. I'm going to give you a brief overview of just some demographic data in the state, and then Wayne is really going to provide for you the overview of the disaggregated data by ethnicity. But the first thing that I'd like to say is one of the things that you're well aware, and I will not belabor the point, is that we've all been concerned about the growing achievement gap with our Oregon kids. One of the reasons we presented the policy option packages we have over the course of this year is to very directly target these areas around the achievement gap. The dropout prevention program is to assure our kids stay in school. And our package, particularly on low-performing schools, is really aimed at supporting kids in doing better instructionally with their learning at all levels. I'd like to refer to some information I acquired it from Pat Burke, but it is also comes from the Center on Education, and it talks about closing the achievement gap. And one of the things that they talk about, and this is page 2 in your notebook if you'd like to kind of follow along here a little bit. Page 2 really talks about what are we going to do about the achievement gap, and it really speaks to actions for policymakers. And one of the things it acknowledges from this research group is that policymakers are moving swiftly and boldly to raise academic standards and hold schools accountable for improving the achievement of all subgroups. And I think in almost every education committee that I've been in during this session, that conversation has been held by you as our legislative representative.
Excuse me, Kate, what was the impetus of this report? Was this something the legislature last session directed the department to do, or what brought this about?
This full report?
Yes.
The impetus for this report really was an original question from Senator Gordley. Early in.
Mr. Ryan?
What timing?
Yeah. Perfect.
Senator Hartung, was that a planted question?
Of course not.
Of course not. Thank you. Senator Gordley brought this to my attention about 2 months ago in a conversation that she and Superintendent Bunn and I were having about the need to understand how our students are doing in our schools. And she then invited us to meet with the Senate Democratic Caucus. And that was a great opportunity for us to pull all of our information together in a succinct version as possible. We basically had it initially in reams and reams of paper by individual school, and it was pretty difficult to manage. So we gave this report probably about a month ago to the Senate Democratic Caucus, and then I think other conversations occurred, and last week we received a request from this committee to present what we know. So we had informal requests for it, but this Senator Gordley's request was the first formal request that we've received.
Yeah, this is so timely. I was just, as I was thumbing through this, thinking about things 6 months ago coming into the session that I hoped we would address and hope we could really accomplish some things. And, we're doing pretty well, except, and I see on page 2 there, it says it takes more than testing, closing the achievement gap, Washington, D.C. There's so much emphasis on testing. You probably noticed the U.S. Congress passed education bill with the testing, annually, grades 3, 5, 8. I'm just, thank goodness we have a Neuberger here, because that is a real project to do justice to the testing part of it.
Well, it is, and it's certainly an important component, because you do have to know how our students are doing, but it is not the only component to creating good schools for children to learn and grow, and I think that's really what this page 2 points out, is that we need to know how our students are doing, and we need to have valid measures of that, which I believe a good assessment process does. But we also need to make sure that our teachers have the kind of skills and knowledge that they can present high-quality curriculum and instruction to students. And as a colleague of mine, and I know also Senator Gordley's, Pat Burke from Portland Public Schools talks about, it's not only an achievement gap, it can also be an instructional gap, that our kids need to be in classrooms where teachers know how to differentiate instruction to meet their educational needs. And that's one of the key challenges, I believe, is at the core of whether or not our kids are going to really be able to do well and score at their ability level.
Question?
Yes.
You said something, Kate, for teachers to differentiate. How do they do that?
Well,
I mean, that to me is just mind-boggling. Whole statement you said is just so incredibly.
Well, Mr. Chair, Representative Smith, it is not easy. I'll begin with that. But a teacher in a math, for example, a math lesson, is going to have students in his or her classroom of varying levels of ability, understanding. And what that teacher needs to have in his or her back pocket is some strategies on instruction to be able to teach to a student that could be, if it's a third grade classroom, there's going to be students in there working at fifth and sixth grade level of mathematics. And there'll be students in there working at a first or second grade level of mathematics, plus children that are probably on grade level. And there are strategies that teachers can use very successfully in teaching to a concept and then differentiating the kind of problems that students solve in the classroom. And that's the kind of strategy that a teacher needs to have.
Does that transcend all race barriers, ethnicity barriers, you're saying? Those strategies would do that.
Mr. Chair, Representative Smith, I can't say that it would transcend the language issues, but certainly the rest,
certainly
the other issues, the many of the other kinds of issues that cause children to have an achievement gap.
Okay. go ahead. Thank you very much.
Yes. Certainly.
Thank you. Continue.
So along with, I won't belabor differentiated instruction too long here, but there's also the ability of school districts, and it really gets into the report. School districts are needing to be held responsible for setting policy that will support schools that are low-performing schools or that have more challenging students. And one of the ways that this report suggests is that if you can't lower class size throughout the whole district, perhaps the lowering of class size in high minority schools. And it's that sort of strategy that districts can employ about targeting their resources and that thing, and that sort of thing, that will also assist in closing the achievement gap. What I'd like to do now is have you turn to page 10, which is under the tab Demographic Data. And I just want to move through fairly quickly just a way for you to get in touch a bit with who are our Oregon children and some of the changes. And in some ways, this is a timely report along with all the census information that's coming out, because it really reflects the census data that you've been reading about over the last month or so in the paper as well. But Oregon is looking at a very different student base as we move into this 21st century. And here's some of the things that have happened in just the last 15 to 20 years. Minority student enrollment, there's been a 273% increase in minority student enrollment occurring between 1975 and 2000. K-12 Hispanic enrollment has steadily increased from 9,091 students in 1975 to an all-time high of 56,000 students in the year 2000. That's a 521% increase in Hispanic students in our state. That changes the nature of our classrooms, and it enriches the cultural aspects, and it also challenges our teachers and our schools to assure that we teach all students to high standards. We also know that the African American K-12 student enrollment has increased from 8,342 in 1975 to 15,000 students in 2000. That's an 85% increase in the number of our black students. And Asian Pacific Islander students have increased about 286%, and our American Indian Alaska Native K-12 student enrollment has increased 124%. So you can begin to see the increase in our what we've traditionally called our minority student population. What we have also on page 11 is a point that I think is also part of this conversation, and that is our minority teachers. Oregon has made very little progress in hiring and keeping minority teachers. 15 years ago, 2.1% of our teachers were minorities. By 1999-2000, that number had only risen to 4.2%. Meanwhile, the student percent minority has steadily risen from 5.9% to 19.5% in the year 2000. And one of the research pieces that is at both national and within our own state, of particularly evident with some of the work our Teacher Standard Practices Commission has done, is that it makes a difference for students in schools to be able to see teachers and to have teachers of their ethnic background. And whatever we can do to recruit our talented young students, particularly our minority students, into education, it will help all of us do better. Also, another point that we need to consider is that the number of students in English as a second language or bilingual education programs has risen sharply from 5,578 students in 87 and 88 to 44,256 students in 1999 to 2000. That's a 693% increase. Now, one of the things I'll just remind you of, many of our English as a second language students are also white students, because we have our Russian students and other Caucasian students. So we're not just talking about our Hispanic students in that picture. What we have, the rest of this data will show projections of the growth of our students. For example, on page 12, one of the reasons why this isn't just a year 2000 concern and perhaps it'll go away, we have a projected population increase, and I will say that you can see very graphically between 1980, 1990, and the year 2000, the growth of our minority students. And that's a visual that perhaps will help. And with that, I'm going to turn this opportunity to provide assessment data to Wayne in relationship to some of our growing trends demographically. So, Mr. Neuberger.
Thank you. For the record, Wayne Neuberger, Associate Superintendent for Assessment Evaluation with the Oregon Department of Education. You'll turn to the tab that says assessment data on it. I'll go through some of the findings in looking at this data. But let me first explain a little bit about what we've got here. We have some, our data, we track back to 96, so basically over the last 5 years, and our performance of kids from various racial and ethnic groups over that period of time. And our initial request was just for reading and math, so that's what we've pulled together, although we will in the future be looking at our other, particularly writing, which we have data back that far on, but for this report we don't include it. Although in the back you'll find tabs that say writing, math, reading, and science, and what we have there is for the 2000 testing, the results by school within district in alphabetical order for each of those subjects. And it lists the number of students in a school that are of a particular racial or ethnic group. And then if there are more than six students, we'll report the percentage of kids who can meet the standard by that racial or ethnic group. And if there's a significant difference between the white students and any of the other groups, there'll be a star next to them for the figure to indicate that the difference is a significant difference. In a lot of cases, you'll see that there isn't any significant difference, but in others, you will. In some cases, actually, the significant difference is in favor of the student from the minority group. What I'll do is go through the findings, the key findings on page 34, what I like to do is look at numbers. So the tables on page 43 and 44 are the ones that I've sort of looked at in terms of looking at the trends. One of the things that I notice about that is when you go from year to year, the percentage of kids who can meet the standard does fluctuate. Sometimes it goes up, sometimes it goes down. And so, which is why I think it's really important to look at over a number of years to take a look at the trend, because you can get a particular group coming through in 1 year that might skew the results. Let me begin with grade 3. First, which is the most positive piece of information that we've got in here. From 96 to 2000, the percent of third grade students meeting the reading standard has climbed steadily for all racial ethnic groups, with blacks achieving the greatest percent increase. And what we can say here about, if we go back to 96 and we look at the difference between the percentage of kids in the various minority groups and the Caucasian students, and then we look at it again in 2000, the gap has decreased for the percentage of kids who can meet that standard in every racial and ethnic group between 96 and 2000. I think we're finding a little bit of what we're finding is there's a substantial number of kids third grade who can meet the third grade standard, with about, I think, 85% of the white students being able to, so they've sort of beginning to top out, and the other ones are beginning to catch up with them, is what I think is happening. For mathematics, from 96 to 2000, the percent of third grade students meeting the math multiple choice standard has climbed steadily for all racial ethnic groups, with Native Americans achieving the greatest percent increase. What I would say here, though, is that even though all groups have increased, that the gap between the minority groups and the white is about the same. So all of them are pretty much going up at about the same rate, except for the Native American students who are increasing at a faster rate. At grade 5, from 98, that should be, I believe, 96. the 2000, the percent of fifth grade students meeting the reading standard increased for all racial ethnic groups. Hispanics achieved the greatest percent increase during this period. And I, again, I would say that the gap in reading decreased for all of the groups, some fairly slightly, but what we're finding is in reading at fifth grade, again, a decrease in the gap between the white students and other minority students. In mathematics, from 96 to 2000, the percent of fifth grade students meeting the math multiple choice standard increased for all racial ethnic groups. Native Americans and whites achieved the greatest percent increases. However, what we find beginning here in fifth grade is that even though the percent meeting the standard increased, the Hispanic kids did not increase at the same rate as the other kids. And there begins to be a little bit of a widening of the gap in fifth grade mathematics for Hispanic students. Let me move on to grade 8. From 1996 to 2000, the percent of eighth grade students meeting the reading standard increased for all racial ethnic groups. Blacks and Asians had the largest percent increase. What I would say here is we're beginning to see some differentiation. For the African American students, the gap actually decreased between them and the white students from 96 to 2000. However, the gap increased for the Native American and Hispanic students. So we begin to see a little bit of a differentiation occurring. From 1996 to 2000, the percent of eighth grade students meeting the mathematics multiple choice standard increased for Native Americans, Asians, Blacks, and whites. However, the percent of Hispanics meeting the standard decreased. But this is one of those weird situations where for the Hispanics, there's a trend actually up if we look at 97, but for some reason between 96 and 97, there was a pretty good dip, and that might have just been variation in the data. But again, the gap increases for all groups except for the Asian students between 96 and 2000. So what we're seeing is an improvement, but the whites are improving faster than minority students are. From 1996 to 2000, the percent of 10th grade students meeting the reading standard increased for whites, Asians, and Native Americans. However, the percent of Hispanics and blacks meeting the standard decreased. And so what we're seeing here is more of a differentiation, again, that's occurring at the high school level. And from 1996 to 2000, the percent of 10th grade students meeting the mathematics multiple choice standard increased for Asians, whites, Native Americans, and Hispanics. However, the percent of blacks meeting the standard decreased. Again, though, the gap between the whites and the other minorities between 96 and 2000 tended to increase. So we have sort of two pictures here. We have a picture, particularly in reading in the elementary, where there's a definite closing of the gap between the majority group of students and the minority groups of students. But then when you get to the middle school and the high school, even though we see some improvement, it's not nearly as rapid in some of the minority groups as it is in the white students. And I'm not sure we can explain all of this. However, we are looking at some additional data to begin to try to understand what might be some of the factors that could be contributing to that.
Mr. Chair.
Yes, Senator Troll.
Do we have any idea of how many of the students at the high school level are products of our elementary and middle schools, and how many come from immigrating in, this kind of thing? Do we know?
Mr. Chair, Senator Troll, that's a good question. I don't have any figures on that. I don't know if...
we'd have to bring that information back.
Yeah. Would it be a good assumption that that if we're doing so well at the lower levels with our testing and we're showing achievement in most all of these groups, that will carry over in a few years into the high school and we'll see better scores then, not as much of an achievement gap? Or are there factors around the high school that are responsible for these lower scores?
Mr. Chair, Senator Troll, we've looked at some of that data, and there's a definite, if you follow the same group of students through, even at just at a gross level, at the state level, you do see that it is cumulative, that as they move from one grade level to the next, that they tend to carry that with them. Although when we get to the secondary level, it isn't as quite as distinct as it is at the elementary level, even from elementary to middle school. Mm-hmm. When we get to the secondary level, there just seems to be some other things going on there that I think we're going to have to attend to and begin to understand what really is going on there with those secondary levels. There's, you know, I think there's a fair amount of research that gets into issues around how expectations for some of those kids are formed at the secondary level, not always by the school, but sometimes by peer groups and things like that in terms of orientation towards being, you know, an academic achiever. And I think it just gets a lot more complex when you get to the secondary level of things you got to deal with to try to make for sure kids continue, if they got a good foundation, make for sure that they continue to build on that foundation. But we have some encouraging evidence, I think, that indicates that at least through eighth grade that is occurring, that